Black women are 3 times more likely than white women to be victims of homicide. But Oakland Community College professor Cheryl Neely says when she turned on the TV or opened a newspaper, it seemed like they were rarely mentioned. Her new book, You're Dead, So What?, looks at how the media ignores missing and murdered black women and the serious consequences that has for victims and their families. The book was motivated by both her work as a sociologist as well as a deeply personal experience with the issue. When I talked with Cheryl Neely last week, she told me she started her research by opening the newspaper.
So I went about selecting the types of newspapers from different cities that I wanted to get my data from, coming up with a coding scheme to look at certain factors in those newspapers that would determine how prominent the story was, whether or not it appeared on the front page or it was buried in an alternate section of the newspaper, how long the article was, whether or not the victim received more than one article written about her death, whether or not there were what I call qualitative indicators, descriptions of the victim, her personality, whether or not she was married, level of education, so forth and so on. So I kind of designed the project, and I started from there.
You looked at 3 newspapers, the Detroit Free Press, the Washington Post, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Talk to us about the differences you found.
Well, what I found is that there appear to be patterns of bias in favor of white victims in all 3 newspapers. What was surprising to me was the bias was less pronounced in the Washington Post. I found the greatest racial bias in the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. I also found statistically significant discrimination with the Free Press. While there was some patterns of bias in the Washington Post, it was less bias in the Washington Post, and I found that to be due to the fact that the reporters that were responsible for writing those articles tended to be very racially diverse, which to me indicated that there tends to be less racial bias when there's more racial diversity in your reporting staff.
And we cannot say, Cheryl, that there are that many more white women murdered than African-American women, correct? How does that break down?
Well, the way it breaks down, the statistical probability of a black woman being murdered is 1 in 235 chances. For white females, I believe it was 1 in 905. Black women are 2.5 times more likely to be victims of homicide than white women.
In addition to the review of the news articles, you also took a look at several specific cases as examples of what you found in your research. Can you talk to us about some of those cases?
Yes. What I tried to do is take 2 cases that I could contrast, one of a black female victim and one of a white female victim, killed in the same city, roughly around the same period of time, and look at the difference in media coverage and law enforcement response to each one of those cases. There was one case that's particularly disturbing that continues to haunt me to this day, a young woman by the name of Ramona Moore, who was a 21-year-old African-American female who attended Hunter's College in Brooklyn, New York. She was kidnapped off the streets and held for 3 days in a dungeon of horrors, if you will. She was raped, sodomized, beat, and eventually murdered. But she was held for 3 days. When her mother, Ellie Carmichael, called the police to report her missing, initially they didn't want to take the report because she was 21 years old, and they said that at that age, it could look as though she had walked away. And they closed the case because they didn't consider her to be a missing person despite her mother's protests. Even when the mother went to media asking for help, if they could broadcast her daughter's picture in the news, they weren't interested in covering the story because they heard from law enforcement that she was not a missing and endangered person when they contacted law enforcement for confirmation that Ramona was a missing person. So 3 days later, someone made an anonymous call to her family's home, Ramona's mother's house, because her family posted posters throughout the neighborhood asking people for information. So someone had went and saw the information. They knew Ramona was being held, and they knew that Ramona had been killed, so they anonymously called her mother. The family went and found her body, called the police. The police came to the scene. About maybe 6 months later, there was a woman named Svetlana Aronoff, a white female, 44 years old. She was wife of a physician in New York City. They lived on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Police were called by her husband when she failed to pick up her father-in-law from the airport, They arrived at the apartment. There were 11 police officers. They took a report. They asked for pictures of Svetlana Aronoff. They took those pictures, made posters of them. They distributed them throughout Manhattan, asking people if they had seen her. There was one story after another in the media, on TV, in newspapers, asking for any information about Mrs. Aronoff. About 5 months later, her body was found in a river in New York. She was found dead, but they couldn't determine that foul play was the cause of her death. But that case got an extraordinary amount of attention compared to Ramona.
I've got to ask you, what do you think is at the root of this disparity?
I think it just fits a pattern of institutional discrimination and racism that's been a problem for centuries in this country. I don't think that as we are in the era of the Black Lives Matter protest, that these victims are seen as worthy of attention or even law enforcement resources, especially when sometimes the response is lacking due to pervasive stereotypes, like young Black women missing being thought to be runaways instead of people who are actually in danger. I think that, you know, economically, it could boil down to dollars and cents. In the literature I've read, that has been some of the explanation, that the people that subscribe to newspapers are largely white. The people that are watching news programs, the audience is largely white. So if that's your audience, you tend to create stories or feature stories that appeal to that particular group. So it could be economic. It could be a reflection of racial bias that's inherent in our social structure. Either way, it's something that really needs to change in order for victims to get the level of attention that they need.
Cheryl Neely is a sociology professor at Oakland Community College. We're talking about her new book, You're Dead, So What?, which deals with the way media treats Black women who are victims of homicide. Cheryl, you have a really personal connection to this subject in the book. In high school, a close friend of yours was brutally raped and murdered. Can you tell us a little bit about Michelle Kimberly Jackson?
Yes, Michelle Kimberly Jackson was a good friend of mine. She was one of my younger sister's best friends. She was a junior at Murray Wright High School in 1984, January 24th, 1984. Her body was found in a garage. She had been beaten, strangled, and sodomized. Michelle went missing the day before. Her mother, Carlotta Jackson, went to the Detroit police. She reported her missing. They said, again, as they typically did, that she may have run away from home. After 24 hours, they would look for her. Her mother said and assured them she was an honor student. She'd never run away. This isn't typical of my daughter, and so forth and so on. And they basically told her, if you don't think we're going to look for her quick enough, look for her yourself, which Carlotta Jackson and Michelle's cousin Jody Kenny went out looking for Michelle. They formed a search party. They called friends and asked them if they had seen her at school. None of us had. They went searching for her the next day, and they found her body in a garage. And that very same officer that told Carlotta Jackson, if we don't look for her fast enough, you can look for her yourself, was the very same officer that had to drive her hysterical and inconsolable mother home from the murder scene. Michelle's case, again, didn't get a lot of attention. There were about 39 African-American females that had been raped between September 1983, and I believe it was February 1984, they were called the schoolgirl rapes, and Coleman Young was mayor at the time, and people were very up in arms about this. They were very angry. Michelle was the only victim that had been murdered, but even though she was the only person killed, her death only netted maybe a couple of stories in the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News. Most of the press about Michelle's murder came after the fact, when the man that was convicted of her murder, Eddie Joe Lloyd, was coerced into a confession by the Detroit police, served 17 years in prison for her murder, and was exonerated when the Innocence Project, led by Barry Scheck, they tested the DNA, and they found that DNA did not match Eddie Joe Lloyd, so they let him go. So he served 17 years of his life in prison for a rape and murder he didn't commit. But most of the attention given to Michelle's death was about Eddie Joe Lloyd's erroneous conviction. It really wasn't about her as a victim. So that was heartbreaking for her family. It's still heartbreaking because at this point, the case is still unsolved. Right now, her family is trying to pressure the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office and the Detroit Police to find that DNA, test it, send it to the FBI, put it in a database, and see if they can find the person actually responsible for Michelle's murder. And I really hope and pray that if nothing else comes from this book, that Carlotta Jackson will finally have closure in her daughter's death after 30 years. It's been 30 years since Michelle's murder. And trust me, that wound has not healed, not for the people that loved her and miss her even today.
There's been a lot of criticism this week about how the media and law enforcement interacted in the case of the fatal shooting of black teenager Laquan McDonald by a Chicago police officer. That officer has just been charged with first-degree murder, but many have expressed outrage about how little media attention was paid to the case before a video of the shooting was released. How does the interaction between media and law enforcement impact the cases of black murder victims?
Well, I actually have a chapter in my book called An Uneasy Alliance, and it looks at that symbiotic relationship between law enforcement and media. Law enforcement was very generous with me. Members of law enforcement did submit to interviews with me in the book, and they talked about the importance of media. Media generates tips from the public. It humanizes the victim. It makes people empathetic, sympathetic, compassionate. Sometimes it motivates them to outrage where they demand more attention from law enforcement. They demand that these cases be solved. So media, a lot of times, gets information about cases from law enforcement, and they can put pressure on law enforcement to solve cases. Law enforcement depends on media, again, to get tips from the public to help solve crime. So they work together. They work hand in hand. It's necessary that you have an emphasis in these cases from both. You need both media and law enforcement at the table to bring justice for victims of violence.
And what specifically do you think needs to change, Cheryl?
I think that the media needs to pay more attention to victims of color. I think that's very important because media is a very important resource. And as I said before, law enforcement recognizes that, victims' families recognize that. So I think that people have to continue to put pressure on media to give a certain level of attention to victims.
What do you hope people get out of your book?
I hope they get an understanding that all lives should matter. Black women, when they are endangered, do matter. And that media needs to use their very important resources to help all victims of crime. I hope we see a change in this. And I do hope, again, that my good friend Michelle Jackson's murder is solved as a result of the attention I've given it from my book.
We've been talking about the media portrayal of black female victims of homicide with Cheryl Neely, Oakland Community College professor. Her new book, You're Dead, So What?, investigates the racial and gender disparities in news coverage of murder victims. Cheryl, thanks very much for joining us
today.
Thank
you, Mark. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.